Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should.
Folks, welcome back to another episode of Guitar Radio Show. Our next guest, you heard that track on the way in. That's a track, it's a new single from our next guest. It's called Touch the Sky. Killer track. And I'm really interested to talk to this guitar player today and kind of pick his brain. He's from the James Pace Band. Please welcome to Guitar Radio Show, James Pace. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it as well. So you've got this new record that's getting ready to come out. It's called the Sierra Madre Sessions, which I love the title. I wish I would have thought of that. That's a great title. And where is this record recorded?
So it was recorded in the hills of Sierra Madre, California.
Hey, how about that?
Just outside of LA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just got an intense amount of inspiration from the area at the time when cutting it.
Yeah.
And I said, there's no better way to pay back or the respect of what I'm getting. The energy from the mountains, you could literally feel it.
Yeah.
I said, let me put it back out to the universe. So yeah. There you go.
That's great. I love that. That's, you know, and that is so true. You know, when you like kind of disconnect when you're recording. You know, like Pat Metheny, like he used to love to go to Oslo in Norway to record and be completely like disconnected. in that way. And then the demographics or the geographics, I really should say, of where you're recording can really, really determine whether what the record, how the inspiration will happen, that flow of energy.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
How do you think this differs from your record from 2017, The Kings of Groove?
So that was recorded years earlier, but I think it hit the press there, so to speak, in the 2017 due to the way that Spotify publishes it. But that was a Philly experience with a bunch of guys from Philly that were really big in the scene here. The first album, Kings of Groove, they all moved out to LA, or the majority of them, and the producer actually went back out to LA, won a couple of Grammys. He had done most of the work on the King's Groove as the drummer, the producer, and he funded it. Ted Greenberg is his name. Mm-hmm. So this experience, that was all East Coast. However, he did move after. But this experience for this album, for Sierra Madre Sessions, that album itself is done over the course of about a year in LA. So it's just a different, totally different thing, right? So when you get on an airplane, you're focused for 6 hours thinking about what you're going to do when you're there, and you're preparing for it because it's an expense. It's not just getting up, you know, in the morning and running over to the studio and just doing something. It's like a physical, emotional process of like, okay, I not only have to work, mm-hmm. you know, I have to make sure that I have inspiration. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. You land, you know, in LA, and you go do your thing and go to the hotel, and I get up in the morning, I do a workout and have my water, have a routine. I go over there at 9 o'clock in the morning, like it was, you know, ready to go and set up. And then you go outside, and the mountains are magnetic. There's actually a magnetic pull. Mm-hmm. And I literally could feel that. And I said, you know, this is, I said to the engineer, Billy Burke, I said, this is outrageous. Like, I've never, I'm an East Coast guy. I said, coming out here, I can literally feel these mountains, man. He goes, yeah. He's like, people say that. I said, I can't believe more people don't talk about it. He said, yeah, some people just don't. They just keep going by. They drive right by them every day. They go to work. But I can feel something. So mm-hmm. I'll tell you, that drove a lot of inspiration. It drove a lot of, I would say, ideas and tones and open-mindedness, I'll call it, into this recording. There was not 1 ounce of stress or negativity mm-hmm. in that room the entire time. Mm-hmm. No matter how hard something may have been, whether it was we had a few issues with amps and things. Nothing was bad. You know, it was like, it just that whole mindset is just wildly important. So yeah, it was very different, extremely different from anything I've ever done in a great way.
You said something that really kind of piqued my interest just now. You said the open-mindedness of it. Elaborate.
I don't know if it's, you know, as you mature in life, I guess, but I don't say no to anything. I'll listen, mm-hmm. and it could be a producer saying a key change. It could be, you know, the bass player saying, hey, I don't think we should do this. The drummer saying that. Mm-hmm. So I wrote these songs, and yeah, I have the arrangements all set, and you go in. But I was open to listening and taking from everybody in the room because they had such experience and talent mm-hmm. that there was never a moment I said, no, it goes like this, you know? Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, tell me that again. Let me think through that. Let's talk about it. Or let's try it, you know, that type of thing. We were really efficient in the studio. But at the same time, we did work on a few things when somebody said, hey, maybe, what do you think about this, you know? So I think being open to energy, being open to thoughts, being open to how somebody feels when they're in the room, you know. Mm-hmm. I tried to just soak all of that in and really just consume it and, you know, drink it, if you will, so that it pour back out of me in a positive way. So, well, if I didn't have an open mind, everything would just wash over me, and then I'm just, you know, I'm an actor, right? Mm-hmm. So I really took everything in. I mean, everything. So being open-minded, defined as everything that comes at me, I took in. I filtered some things out, but took everything in.
Do you have you really thought about the gravity of that? I mean, there are so few musicians, particularly guitar players, that are willing to do that. And I think, you know, I think part of it is, you know, the level of maturity that you're bringing to it. Part of it was where you were. But do you think it's always been that way for you? Or do you think that now, because of where you are, where you're going, and this is a sort of a pinnacle moment for you with this new record, do you think that had something to do with it as well?
I guess I hadn't thought that through, right? Like, intentionally.
Right.
It was more of a subconscious kind of, well, if I'm with great people, right, they're going to be smarter than me. Everybody's smarter than you, right?
Right.
And if you don't think everyone, at least give them the respect that maybe they are.
Right.
But I was assuming they were, and they would throw value back at me. So I think it was more about processing it and being open to that. I think just in general, right? So whether it's a business, you know, Jack Welch used to say he doesn't want to be the smartest guy at the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are others who've said that in different lines of different parts of technology. I think it's important to constantly remind yourself that, you know, there's a million people out there who could do it, quote unquote, better, but what's your way? What's right. your stand?
Right.
Right. So if they could tell me play a C chord, go to a D or whatever, you know, whatever. But the way in which I interpret that, the way I play it, is going to be me.
Right.
Or it should be. Right. I should be striving for that. So really, that was more about first being, you know, open to that, you know, mathematics of it operationally, but second, putting your stamp on it. Because no matter what somebody said, you put your stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important. So yeah, I'm aware of it now, but I did think about it when I was there. I didn't want to have any, my whole thing is this, Mark, I didn't want to have 1 ounce of negative energy in this process. I have no space in my life for anything there. Right. If there's anything that pops up that's bringing me in this direction, which is the wrong direction, I walk from it, or I don't recognize it. I don't spend any time on it.
Right.
Right, so I wanted nothing but positive in that room. And in my life, you know, it's hard as hell to do that in your life. But man, that was my space and my time, so I certainly wanted to use it wisely. So
yeah, and you know, and the world that we're currently living in can make that really, really difficult. So the fact that you were able to, I mean, overcome all of that, even, you know, then and now. I mean, granted, you were recording this before the world that we're living in now, but mm-hmm. the idea that the essence of what you're saying right now is that you've held on to that, and to me, that's gigantic. That's huge for any musician or any human, for that matter, to be able to hold on to that mentality to bring this to its logical place, to the next logical place of, you know, when it's out there and the rest of the world experiences it, I think they're going to feel that. I mean, I certainly felt that when I heard the single.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, there's a lot of depth in that track. I mean, it can make me cry. It's deep.
Yeah, it's lush.
There's not a lot of words in there.
It's lush, you know, and the production, the playing, the lyrics, the vocal performance, you know, it's really very big, you know. I haven't heard the rest of the record yet. I've only heard snippets. You know, would you say that the Touch the Sky is sort of emblematic of what the rest of the record is like?
It is. It is. I mean, the whole point, I think, of really when you're expressing yourself is to get something across, either a stamp of some sort, whether it's your tone or your songs,
yeah,
or a little bit of both, right? Or there's always something you're trying to say is you. This particular album, I say, is lyrically more deep than I've ever been able to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because of I guess it comes with time and age, right? You go through life and you lose people to certain things.
Yeah.
And you know, you learn from lessons as you go. So that's kind of all, you know, compacted into this. But yeah, it is definitely, it's going to be pretty consistent across in the messages. The music's very varied. I have some stuff that's like Motown on there. I've got some stuff that's like Shaft. I've got stuff that's like, you know, Hendrix. I've got some stuff on there. I have an acoustic track. I wrote some last night, I think I might put on there, actually. I wrote it on acoustic. I was sitting there listening to Floyd for 4 or 5 hours and just playing all different tunings. And I wrote this acoustic thing. I said, yeah, it's very different. It's very melodic. And, yeah, so there's a lot of lush layers in there as well. So I think it's one of those things when you listen to it from beginning to end, it'll take you through a process or a journey, so to speak, of not just like pounding your head against the wall as a guitar player, like doing the same thing over and over again. I put a lot of effort into creating variation of tone,
mm-hmm.
different variations of texture. Try not to overdub too many guitars. Try to keep it really organic.
Right.
You know, using all vintage stuff. I mean, very, very straightforward stuff too.
Right. That's something I've been looking for more and more lately in the last year or so, is more albums that were complete, were statements, you know. And I don't, and when I say statement, I don't necessarily mean, I'm making a political statement here. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying a musical statement or an ebb and flow throughout the whole thing, of that when I sit down with it, I go, yeah, the only way to really listen to this record is, you know, is all the way through. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things I've been looking for more and more nowadays. I was talking with somebody recently, and we were talking about, I was talking to my daughter, who's a musician, and she's actually getting ready to release her first record. And her and I were talking about 1975, and that mm-hmm. that year was, I said, you know, I said, that was a heck of a year for albums, you know, not just singles, because it was a big singles year, but an albums as well. So we went and we looked on Google of all the records, all the albums, rock albums or albums that were, you know, that got released that year, and it was just astounding, the level of really, really just this amazing heady stuff. And when I say heady, I don't mean it in a bourgeois standpoint. I mean that they were complete statements, these records, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just astounding. And I'm seeing that more and more artists are starting to strive for that. And that's exciting to me. You know.
Yeah.
I love that.
Nothing better than putting on an LP, you know?
Yeah, I mean, let's, even if it's a CD, you know, and we're going to listen to the whole thing, you know, which was one of the things I did enjoy about when CDs came out, was that, oh, wow, I'm going to listen to, you know, Wish You Were Here or Animals in its entirety the way the band wanted it to be heard. As opposed to at the end of side one, I have to turn it over, and you know, which wasn't a bad thing either, but you know what I mean? Just the, like at that,
yeah,
that statement, that single statement, you know.
Yeah.
So I understand you have a bit of a tie to Austin, Texas, where I'm from. What are your ties to Austin?
It's in probably about, what year are we in? So let's do the math. It's about 25 years, maybe 20, it's about 25 years I've been going back and forth. But I think part of it's just like, what do they call it, serendipity?
Mm-hmm.
Things just sort of happened and you go, wow, how did I get from here to there? So I have a few different, you know, storylines. But it started in 97. I went out to Austin, a meeting with Joe Priesnitz, which Joe just passed, unfortunately, but Joe was obviously Stevie Ray's manager and Eric Johnson and Joe Ely and
yeah.
a bunch of brilliant players.
Yeah.
And that was like one of those moments where I was like getting on a plane with my guitar, like going to have a meeting with this legend, you know. And he actually, I think at the time, I forgot how I got connected. This is scary to say, I forgot, but he heard my Kings of Groove LP, which was back from 98. We released it, and I had a pre-release in 97. And I think he had heard it, or I sent it to him, or somebody sent it to him, or somehow it got to him. I wouldn't be surprised if it was me just forcing it at him, but I don't exactly remember how I got that call. I just remember looking at the phone and looking, and it said 512 area code. Ever since 1990, whatever, 7 or 8 or whatever it was, every time I see a 512 area code, it's like Pavlov's dog. I get excited. I'm looking at your phone number and you call me today. I'm like, I just went full circle.
I'm glad.
But everything from that moment to actually in the last few years, actually, it's been a brilliant run. So I got to see Doyle Bramhall, hang at DB2, and spend a little time, you know, getting to know him. Just through like going to see him and saying hello and talking to him, right? He's the nicest guy.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Vaughn too. Actually, this venue I play up in the Philly area. These guys both played, and the venues are nice enough to say, yeah, you know, you can talk to the guys. So I talked to Jimmy a couple times, and Jimmy Vaughn, he goes, next time you're in Austin, man, you got to check out this place called Sea Boys, right? So I'm like, okay. You know? So he's playing, and it just happened. The week I was going, he wasn't playing. He was on tour, home for a week, and he's going to play there, and then he's back out on tour. So the week, unfortunately, I was there was when he wasn't there. But a friend of mine and I took him with me. I said, we got to go to this place. Jimmy Vaughn told us, I don't care if the place is, you know, on fire, we're going in, right? So we show up. And who's there on stage? Is Loyan Barton belting it out, right, with Denny Freeman standing.
Yeah, man.
I'm looking at and there was like 50 people in there at max. I said to my buddy, I said, you got to be kidding me, right? So we start talking to, you know, Loyan's nice. Denny starts, and his wife start talking with the most amazing people. Matches up to what I saw in 95 when I was there for a while, 97, whenever. And getting to know everybody in this, you know, in that area and how nice everyone was. Denny and his wife invited us to a charity the next day, or benefit, excuse me, where they were auctioning off stuff for Austin Pop's thing is called.
Mm-hmm.
So we showed up to that and got to spend a little time there. But it was just an amazing, just sort of energy and karma and things that always happen. And then a few months ago, Eric Johnson and I kind of connected up at a Sellersville Theater, and then we started trading gear. You know, so when he called me one day at 512, again with that area code, right? It's like my lucky charm. I looked at him, I'm like, well, I grew up loving this guy, and here I am, you know, trading gear with him. So it's a surreal moment being in that world of Austin and around it, loving Stevie and everything that's come out of it, and the admiration I have for it is just such a positive energy, right? Go back to my earlier statement.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is being so good, the energy, you know. So I love it. There, I had a South by Southwest gig that got canceled, actually, but obviously because of COVID. But everything has just been just wonderful in that area. So it's amazing you're there, and I wish I was, you know.
Well, so. I look forward to your return. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Me too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a great place. The love that everyone has for vibration here is astounding. And yeah, I've been experiencing like that as well since 1989 when I first came here. And
wow.
And you know, it was weird, you know, being a New Yorker and coming here the very first time. I remember walking down the street with my then guitar player. And we're walking down the street, and you know, you pass people in the street, and they say hello, huh?
Yes. And what's up with that?
And you know, my guitar player was from the Bronx, and he was like, he was starting to get pissed. He was like, "Why do people keep on saying hello to me? What the hell's going on? This is making me feel really uncomfortable." I was like, "Dude, go with it. It's beautiful."
Yeah,
that's what I mean.
89 is beautiful. It's very different. Then I mean, 89 to even 95, it was a big difference. Oh, and then 95 to 2005, it was wildly different from 2005 to today. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, you know. Just the skyline alone. Yeah. Just the skyline alone.
it's
kind of absurd. Yeah, it really is. But it's still like Billy Gibbons says, it's still a little big town, you know. And but yeah, I hear you and I feel you. Now I know that you know, I want to dip in and out of talking about gear. I know that you're using Shinai. Some Shinai stuff, which is the company that back in the 60s, they were the folks that made the original Vibes, those big units. And now they're, and the company is based in Austin by way of Japan. And so you're using the, which one are you using? The Honey Vibe, is it?
The Honey Fuzz or the FY6. Yeah, I have everything. I have that endorsement deal with Bob. So Bob Feldman is the owner of the brand, Shinai. And he makes it in Austin, I think. He does I guess he has some parts he imports, but...
all the parts are imported. Everything's coming from Behringer City, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, so I have all his stuff, and it's the Vibro is the one that the fuzz I use on the record, on the song, actually on that single, everyone can hear it. It's killer. I ran that with like another fuzz unit, but
that's like the super fuzz, right?
Yeah. Well, he's got three of them. It sort of has like that Octavia tinge to it.
Okay. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a little hair on it, you know, but it sears. The notes just fly out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Through a plexi.
It's an octave above.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's killer stuff, man. I love those sounds. I love those sounds. That's that sounds that, like, you know, Doyle gets those sounds, and who else uses that kind of a vibe? I'm trying to think.
He's got a lot of good roster guys. And Eric Johnson's on there too. That's how I hooked up with Eric, was through Bob. Eric was playing up here in Philly, and I said to Bob, I was like, you know, I've got a couple of tube drivers. I collect the old vintage tube drivers from BK Butler. I said, if Eric wants to, you know, pick around, I need to tell him I have, you know, at the time I think I had four of them. So he sent him a note, and Eric's like, yeah, sure. So I went up, gave it to him, and he took them back home, played around with them. But those tube drivers are really cool, too. Those are nice.
Yeah.
They're a little quirky, but...
Yeah, that's cool. It's funny. I had an interesting conversation with Eric. We were talking about effects and all the gear and everything else. And there is a video out there of Eric at a guitar center somewhere in the Midwest, where he was doing it. He was playing in that city, and then he was going to Guitar Center to do a thing for Fender. And he showed up, none of his gear, at this Guitar Center. And they said, you know, would you play a little bit? They had a little bandstand set up, and it was just going to be him playing. And he had a Princeton, and there was some sort of little delay unit on the floor. And he played one of his Strats off of the wall. And he sounded just like him. And he had forgotten all about this, and I brought it up to him. And I said I said to him, do you think you could go ahead and do this, all that you do, and not bring all that gear out? And he said, but I would have to bring five other guitar players with me. And I was like, I don't agree with that. I said, and then I pointed to that video. And he said, and he was like, wow. He goes, I totally forgot about that. I said, you know, one night you should just go to Antone's on a Monday night, blues night, you know, Blue Monday, and just go with an amp, a guitar, and a cord, and that's it. And you and the band, and just go for it. And and he initially said, he goes, just the idea of that, he said, terrified him. But at the same time, intrigued him. And I said, if you do that, you must call me because I want to make sure I'm there to see it. I was wondering about you. I mean, you know, you use fair amount of stuff. You're not crazy. You're not like him. You don't use the amount of stuff that he's using. But do you feel like you could do that as well? Just plug right in and just say, I'm gonna go naked.
Yeah, it depends on like the amp, right? So if you plug in a Fender with a Fender, I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to sound good,
Yeah.
I use, the old Marshall stuff. It's a 71 head with my Fender, and it takes a lot of work to get it, where you want it. And it's like you say, oh, let me add some color with a Fender, and you patch them. All right, that sounds perfect. Yeah, I've got the vanilla and chocolate, and it's perfect. But yeah, I'm fine going up anywhere, probably with just a Fender Strat with a Fender amp, because they just really just pair. It's just, mm-hmm. It's so easy to just become who you are. It's just like the best palette, mm-hmm. So I think I could, but I'm not going to lie. I have the same disease a lot of the guys do, you're you're chasing something in you can visually see in your mind's eye or something,
Right.
It's like I see what I hear.
Right.
So it's almost like a sonic visual thing. Without really getting the tones you want, you're only satisfying half of your desires. So it's like,
I hear
but
you.
Yes, I could if I had to.
You don't want to, but you could if you had to.
if forced.
Yeah.
One time, my friend's wife said to me, she goes, I don't know, we were at a club or something in Jersey playing not that long ago. Well, maybe a year ago. And she goes, why do you still do this? She looked at me. She goes, why? Because, I'm dragging her husband out, and she's just trying to get him, to stop doing it. I said, I'll tell you why I do this. I said, because I love to put that amp up on that stage and just rip it open,
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
She looked at me like she had no clue what I was talking about. Well, okay.
Because she didn't.
No. That's true too.
She did. It's like my wife. She doesn't understand that. She doesn't get that. But then I'll talk to guitarists that do get it. Like Orenthini or Teresa Topaz or Sue Foley or somebody like that. That it's in the blood. It's got to be in the blood. You know what I mean? It's just how it is. It depends on how you get captured.
Yeah, I think you can see it in someone's face.
It's
amazing. There's so many ways to capture.
Yeah.
To capture.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For you right now, who are you listening to?
Right now, I'm kind of all over the place, but I would say my favorite writer, songwriter now, who's doing it now, is DB2, Joe Bramhall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love him. Probably the most.
Yeah.
He's good at what he does, but he's also got a unique stamp. I'm always looking for that unique stamp.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is probably going back 100 years, but Sunhouse's recordings, mm-hmm. I think I emotionally can't process what he is conveying. I'm not mature enough yet as a human, mm-hmm. my soul. Mm-hmm. This is just, unprecedented power.
Right.
Been listening to that a lot lately. I literally buy Pink Floyd bootlegs and LP as much as I can and try and search for his tones that he threw out. Like you said something about the 70s before, like there's 71 sounded different than 74 and 77 was way different than 80.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll buy like his records and try and fish for different Gilmore tones.
Uh-huh.
I would say that's kind of been my most in the last, week or so. my main kind of popping, bopping around.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting that you mentioned Gilmore, because I would love to see you on the same bill as, like, Eric Tesmer. Are you familiar with Eric?
I know of Eric's name a lot. I've not heard him, but, yeah. You know, the Instagram thing where you just, everything pops up in front of your face. And you, oh, I'm going to take a look at this or listen to this person, and then you never get around to it.
Yeah, check out Eric.
I never see him.
Go check out his EP2. It's really, really good. He's an Austin cat. Very big Gilmore fan. He's been on the show a bunch of times, and I think you two are kind of cut from the same cloth in regards to, one, I think you two would get along swimmingly, and two, I think you guys would sound great together on the same bill, for sure. Here's a question that I've been thinking about lately, and you're the first person that I decided to ask this of, so I'm sorry if
no worries
if we're gonna do this.
Go for
but
it.
You know, I'm a in the last oh I don't know 12 years or so I became a huge Strat player. Before that, I really didn't play a lot of Strats. It was Telecasters and Gibsons and Hamers and stuff like that. And it was because I hadn't matured. I hadn't gotten myself to a place where I was able to squeeze that lemon, so to speak. Your main instrument is a Strat. Besides the, you know, normal connotations as to why some guitar players pick up the Strat, what is it about that particular model for you that is the reason that it's your choice?
I don't know if it's one of those things where it goes back to a real simple answer. It's like, it's almost what you started on is what you feel is home. Uh-huh. With an instrument. Uh-huh. And my first guitar was a Kramer from 1980 something.
Right.
That I bought at the factory in Neptune, New Jersey, because it wasn't far from my house where I grew up.
Right.
And I went in there with my parents and pulled it off the rack, and it just felt like I just gained $1 billion in my bank account.
Right.
And I went home with that thing and never put it down. So that shape, that body shape, was what a Strat shape is. In terms of, like, you know, the weight of it, the feel of the body, how it fits against your body, how you learn against it. Had I bought a Les Paul first, I probably never would play a Strat. I mean,
interesting.
Maybe I would have, you know, because to me, it's very interesting, especially as you get older. And I said that several times in this call already, but the aesthetics, the tactile stuff, your hands touching the string, your pick and picking, the dexterity at how hard you pick the string, the way it resonates on your body. These are things I never thought about when I was 12, let alone, you know, 35.
Right.
But as you get into the point of your life, you start to go, okay, all of this is important. And I don't mean important because you want to play a guitar. It's important because you're talking about resonance, you're talking about your emotions connected to this thing. People used to say Van Halen's body was like in his guitar world. Well, Hendrix too, I guess they said that. And it's true. You know, it's like it becomes part of you. Okay. So I think for me, I think it was just because I was used to that shape. Mm-hmm. I liked the way that feel is. Now, that's the feel. The tone and all that other stuff is separate. That goes into the bucket of who are your influences that really drove you most, right? So there's two answers to the question. One is the way it feels. The second is the tonality. So all the players I really liked were playing like that really hollowed out Strat sound, real glassy kind of thing. So I would say the first person, when I looked at getting a Strat, when I went from the Kramer to the Strat when I was a kid, was Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. It was like, what in God's name is that?
Yeah.
Like, that's that sound is what I want to see and hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I never looked back after that. Like, I still have the poster of him with a picture of him playing it. I think it was his promo shot from his album, second album. And in the pictures, this is 54. And I just look, I'd stare at that thing. And I said, I got to get this thing. Yeah. I saved up money, you know, and then asked my grandfather for the last 20 bucks, you know. Went down to Monmouth Music and bought a an American Standard Strat with a, sunburst. It was like a tobacco sunburst. And the neck on it was, I liked the body. I didn't like the neck. It was, he had a rosewood neck, so Nick took off the neck, put on a maple neck. I played that, and it was real punchy, and I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two sides of that coin. I think it's the feel and the way it feels, and then the sound and the quality and tonality. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a great answer. Now, everybody else who's I'm going to be asking this question of is going to have a harder, much harder time to satisfy me. So that's good.
Yeah. It's hard to put to words sometimes, isn't it? You know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, because, and for me, the crazy thing is like, the more I play them, the more I realize, well, that one doesn't sound like that one. That one doesn't feel like this one. This one makes me play like this. This one makes me play like that. Jesus Christ, I've got 12 of them. You know, it's kind of insane because they and I can't say that about a Les Paul. I can't say that about almost any other kind of guitar. Not even Telecasters. You know.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, I have when Doyle was on the Reptile tour with Clapton, the black Telecaster that he was playing, after that tour, he unloaded a bunch of guitars so he could get the Strat, the Sunburst Strat that he plays now. And
okay.
I was lucky enough to get that black Telecaster.
Wow.
So I have that Telecaster. It's in, and I've had other Telecasters. And I was like, no, this is it. So I own one Telecaster and 12 Stratocasters.
There you go.
It's kind of insane, you know, but but yeah, I mean, every single Strat that I have, it's got a different sound, a different vibe. And that's what I love. For me, with the Strat, it's the modular nature of the of Fender in general. Is just this whole modular idea of, well, I can do this. Like you said, you know, oh, we'll take the rosewood off, we'll put the maple on. And it's and it sounds completely different. It's never ending. So your tonal landscape can be different with every single instrument. I love that. I think that's amazing, you know.
Yeah, it is true too how they are different. And I'm not used to other guitars. It's interesting to hear you say that. I had Fender offered me an artist arrangement, artist deal, whatever they call it, where they make one for you, and I made a custom model. Jason Smith made it, and it's unbelievable how nice it is, obviously, but how well it feels.
Yeah.
And how it sounds. Now, it sounds totally different than the other four or five Strats that I have, but it's just got this unbelievable, it's an ash body, but it's got unbelievable resonance and different resonance than my other one, which is a, you know, a different, that's a custom shop, a different one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they all have like a really amazing, like you said, personality to their own way.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't agree more. They all are different. That's, you know, that's a story we stick to as we collect them. Like, they're all different, honey. So.
But it's true. I think it's definitely true. So
it is.
When do you think we're going to see this record now with all the madness that is happening on our planet Earth? When do you think this might arrive, the Sierra Madre Sessions?
Well, all the music is done. I might need to do a little cleanup, but most of it is done, if 98% of it. So now I have 60% of the vocals done, which means I have a lot to do, 40% or more, actually. So what I'm going to try and do, I just was talking to an engineer last night about this, as I bought a mic, I'm buying a bunch of compressors, going to buy a new Mac, and I'm going to try and do my vocals in my home studio.
Great.
And send them to him, because he said, yeah, you could do that. And I said, really? Sure. He said, yeah, man. He's like, here's the mic I have.
Fly him in.
He's like, just do it. And yeah. I said, okay. I know I could. He's the only difference is you're not going to have a cheerleader. I'm not going to be sitting next to you. And I said, all right, well, let me try it, right? I'm my worst critic, so you know that's going to go, right? It'll be okay. So, yeah, we have to finish it, because we've gotten tremendous response from just this one track. I'm blown away. It's like, wow, I didn't, you know, okay, let's keep going here. You know, we have some great players on there.
Yeah.
It has to be heard, you know, so.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do it next couple months. So the bottom line answer, I would say within 3 months, probably in the fall, because I want to do a pressing to an LP.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, it takes a while to get a lot of fun stuff lined up. But
well, when it's all done, and I've gone ahead and gotten myself a copy, I got to have you back.
Love to.
Honored. And then we can go through it track by track together.
That'd be a blast.
We'll pick it apart, you and me.
Love to.
That'd be a blast.
I appreciate you doing this today.
Hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time out to come and talk to my audience and let them hear Touch the Sky and share some time and just talk about music, man. It's a beautiful thing. It really is.
It is, Mark. It is.
Folks, you can go to jamespaceband.com. Check out the website there. He's also on Facebook, Instagram, and of course on the Twitter webs. You can follow him all those places. Most people, I guess, right now, I think Instagram is kind of like the hit place to be right now until something else comes along. And something else will come along, I promise you that. Folks, please join me in checking out Touch the Sky. It's the single from James Pace Band. And folks, when the record comes out, don't just stream it, buy it, okay? Because when you buy it, artists like this get to make more music. And that's what you want, ultimately. True?
It is true.
It's true.
It is true.
It's true. All right, James, thanks so much. Hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Thanks, Mark.
All right.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, GuitarRadioShow.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Find Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember, if you like the artists you hear on Guitar Radio Show, don't just stream their music, buy it.